Thank you for joining us and welcome to the Auto Guide Show brought to you by eBay Motors. This week we have two Toyota first drives. We drive two manual sedans. We have a very special cause we want to talk about, and later we speak to Meguiar's. But first, a word from our sponsor. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Your elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a driveway entirely its own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with the eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, so let's get into it. We got a lot to talk about this week. We have a lot to talk about pretty much every week. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we'll talk about is you were at Toyota Palooza. We've talked about it a couple times, and now we get to talk about the cars. So the first one we have here is the Camry first drive. And as much as people have abandoned the midsize sedan, it still sells like crazy. So how is it?
Well, unsurprisingly, it's better than it was before. I know that's kind of selling the Camry short, but I mean, even the previous model, it was pretty good right up until the end. It's just, it felt its age in some ways, mostly in interior refinement and in tech. And guess what? They've improved those things. It's still based on the same platform as before, because why not? And now it just has more of a Prius look, which I think looks pretty good. The back is a little questionable. In my mind, I see either GR86 vibes, if I'm being positive, or more kind of modern BMW ones, which is less good. But the hybrid powertrain is improved. It's the fifth gen hybrid motor that we've really enjoyed in the Prius and the Corolla Cross. So it has a little bit more power. All-wheel drive is now available for the hybrid, which means it's the only one in the class to do it. And it's even slightly cheaper than the last hybrid. It's a couple hundred dollars cheaper.
So styling-wise, yeah, I have to give it to Toyota. After their last Camry, I thought, well, they can't get any crazier than that. And then I saw this one in person, and I was like, oh, they did. The hybrid is what, like, it's over 200, right? Even though it's not in the other vehicle.
225, and then 232 in all-wheel drive.
Oh, so it's more. Okay, and then it has the 2.5 as the entry-level engine still?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. As entry-level, no, it's hybrid only. It's the 2.5 hybrid now. It's only hybrid. I should clarify. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's the fifth gen hybrid system attached to the 2.5 for the first time, because previously we've only seen it on the 2. Yeah, so it's good. It seems like they've also improved the motor, so it's less groany than before. Because, I mean, we've driven a RAV4 hybrid recently, right? And when you need to get the ICE working full time, it sounds tortured. This one, not so much. I really liked it, and I liked it specifically in this. In this color combination. This is Ocean Gem, which is all new for the new model year. And it's the XLE, so it's the luxury trim, and it has this nice quilted, like faux wool kind of suede stuff all along the dashboard. It's really nice, and now the tech is good. It's a really smooth car. It's quiet on the road. It's just, yeah, it's a very good sedan, and of course they have to make them very competitive on pricing now to get people to buy sedans, and so it starts under 30 in the US.
Sounds good. So we'll stick to our Toyota theme. This is something I think not as many people are waiting for, but it's a bigger deal because the Land Cruiser is back and you finally got to drive it. I'm a little jealous. I'm looking forward to driving it down the road. How is it? It looks like you're off-roading.
Yes, you said driving it down the road, and I barely got to drive this on the road. So the event was focused more on off-roading, which makes sense because, you know, Land Cruiser. But it was a strange situation because, as we talked about on the podcast last week, the 4Runner debuted. And so all of the journalists who were there had just spent either the previous day or the day before poking around the 4Runner when it debuted and then going into the Land Cruiser and just being like, wait, what's the deal here? There's a lot of overlap. It's hybrid only in the case of the Land Cruiser, whereas the 4Runner, the hybrid is optional. But it's a two row, whereas the 4Runner can potentially have three rows because the hybrid is the limiting factor there. But yeah, there's a lot more similarities here. And I think Toyota is going to face that problem down the road when the new 4Runner releases. But until then, I will say that it's a comfortable off-roader. It's totally fine. It's related to the Lexus GX, which is also very good on the road and surprisingly well-mannered for something that's body on frame. But I can't help think that the price is just too high.
Sounds like we're getting back to the glory days of the American car where they'd have a ton of overlapped cars with different names and you just kind of pick the one you like the name or the slight styling variation of.
Yeah, and I think that will happen with this too. Some people are going to prefer the friendlier, more classic look of the Land Cruiser and the fact that it's like 5.5 inches taller. That's the point, right? Like, which do you want? The rectangle face or the happy circular headlight face?
Yeah. Speaking of rectangular faces. So we had our freelancer Ross Ballett drive the Subaru WRX-TR because we haven't been able to get it our hands on it yet. It was interesting because he is a former WRX owner. I don't think he's owned quite as many or extensive history with him that I have. But anyway, if you read his review, he came away not disappointed, actually. Not like he thought it was a bad car. He was just hoping the TR would be more. Again, me having a long history with WRXs, it sounds exactly what I expected it to. The special edition WRXs are never much more than what it is with a few tweaks. This one sounds like it actually has more tweaks than normal, but if people mm-hmm. go in expecting an STI replacement, well, it's not that. It would have been nice if they got a couple more horsepower out of the engine, you know, intake, exhaust, something. I know people mm-hmm. are going to sit back and be like, oh, you get 40, 50 horsepower with a tune and it only costs a couple $100. It's like, yeah, for you. But the manufacturer can't do that because it hurts their fuel economy, it hurts their emissions, and it worsens the engine durability. And the same people who say $500 and I get a tune for $40 are the same people who are redlining these engines and blowing them up and then wanting Subaru to pay under warranty. So I get that. Again, I wish they got a bit more, but it sounds like the suspension's flatter, the tires grip, the brakes work. So anyway, I am going to be driving it next month, and I'm really looking forward to it because I want to see what it's like. I haven't had that much time in the new WRX, this mm-hmm. last generation, but when I did drive it, it just feels like every new one does. It's like the old one. It's got that charm, but a little more refined. So anyway, it'd be interesting if I have the same conclusion he does or doesn't.
Yeah, we'll find out in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And while on topic of manual sedans, I drove the 2024 Volkswagen Jetta GLI 6-speed. And the cool thing about this is right now in 2024, there are some 6-speed manuals in Volkswagens. But next year, mm-hmm. the Golf loses it wholesale. No more Golf R, no more GTI manual. And the Jetta regular models are losing their manual as well. So the last manual transmission Volkswagen vehicle for now is going to be the Jetta GLI. I mean, who would have thought it'd be that one of them all? But I guess because it's probably so niche, it's easy to like rationalize keeping it around.
I'm shocked. Like, I never would have guessed that. Like, if you told me a few years ago that it would be the GLI, never.
And it's so this is the 40th anniversary edition, which is sold in Canada and the US because guess what? It's celebrating the GLI's 40th anniversary, which to me too is like, wow, I didn't know the GLIs were around that long. So it's driving it is what you expect from a GLI, just a little bit better than the last one I drove. It's not a GTI, and they never really tried to be. I know Volkswagen officially calls it the GTI with a trunk, but the engine's a little less powerful. The response is a little less aggressive. Even the transmission, like everything just seems a little more diluted, but that's what I think the GLI is. It's sort of people who want maybe the sophistication of the sedan look, or they just want a bigger car, but they still want some sport. And that's exactly what it is. And there's like hardly anything left in this class. I mean, there's a Civic Si, which is similar, but it doesn't make nearly the power. And I mean, yeah, we're not huge fans of it. Well, at least not without the summer tires.
Yeah.
And the Forte GT's gone. That was up around there as well. So, you know, good for Volkswagen for keeping this around. It is probably the end of the line. When this thing goes out and becomes electric or a new generation shows up, this manual will be gone. So you got a couple of years. I don't know if we'll ever see one again in Volkswagen. Who knows what the future holds, but for now, this is it.
It's good. It's a really, I mean, I drove the pre-facelift, but yeah, no, it's, I would say it's the best in its class. It's fun. And I mean, I don't think Elantra N line offers a manual anymore either. So, nope. So really it's just Civic Si, and this is more fun than a Civic.
Yeah. Or you go up to Elantra N, but that's a whole different price category and everything. Like,
and the very nice thing
is this is very Volkswagen still to drive. Like, it feels pretty sophisticated and nice and light and everything inside. And then you can go rip around a corner. And the color that they gave me, the gray with the red accents, was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So our last feature for this week has to do with something I'm doing this summer. So for, it's been a long time, 14, 15 years, I've been involved with an organization called Rally North America. A couple of my friends and I went on a spur of the moment kind of road trip in 2009. And they started talking about maybe starting a road rally sort of organization that does scavenger hunts and gets together and just has a good time, but for good cause. So that started in 2010. And since 2010 to today, we have raised over $2.5 million US for the various charities that we use each year. It's basically 80 cars. So we call them teams, but 80 cars of 2, 3, 4 people register. We spend 3, 4 days driving through areas of the US you would never go to and get to see cool back towns and back roads. And the guy who organizes it, my friend Tony, he does a great job of like finding good roads and interesting things. And every team is just is tasked with soliciting donations. It's just all word of mouth. There's no other way to do it. And every year we surpass the last year. Last year alone, we raised 200-something thousand dollars US just from 80 teams asking people for donations. And we have a charity auction the night before, but that usually raises a couple $1,000 more. So anyway, I am doing it this year, and I'm partnering up with Genesis for it. So they have a thing called the Genesis Retail Experience in Canada. There's a similar function in the US as well, where you go to their, it's called Color Fabrics and I can't believe I'm drawing a blank, but basically you go in and someone will take you to this room that has drawers, and every drawer has pieces of metal painted with the different colors of the car, samples of the different leather seats in the different colors, and samples of all the interior trim. And you can look at them all and mix and match them to see sort of what you like to order your car. And if you don't want to go to a Genesis in the US, it's a retailer, and in Canada, it's a distributor. They have a portable kit that they can bring to your house and do the same thing. Now, the cars are somewhat locked into package is, but at least you can see them in different packages together. So I do these rallies with my father and my son, who's going to be 9 this summer. We let him pick out the color scheme for our vehicle. It's going to be a GV80. He was a little upset because he saw the red and was like, that one. But then we found out for 25, the red's been cut from the regular sedan or regular SUV. It's only on the coupe. And we want a coupe, but they just won't be ready in time.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're doing it. And the charity we're supporting this year, I know I'm going on for a while here, but the charity is, I mean, all the charities are great, but this is the one that is the closest to me in my heart. It's called Camp Sunshine, and it's a camp in Maine that services basically the whole world, but really North America to a big degree. And what it is it's a camp for children with either terminal, severe or rare, or maybe a combo of all three diseases. And what they do is every week it's a different theme. So it's a different disease. And the goal is they know if a child's sick like that, it's not just the child that's suffering, the whole family is. So they bring the entire family here and they let the kids who are affected play together, do camp stuff together, you know, and they go swimming or canoeing, whatever. And then the parents also do different seminars and different workshops, and they get to actually interact with other parents who are going through the exact same thing and kind of create a support network. And then the siblings, who are kind of the ones that are not forgotten about, but have to deal with this too. They get to come to the camp and play with other siblings that are experiencing the same thing and going through the same thing. So we first went to it in, I think, 2014, and we were blown away seeing the facility. Like, we actually go there as part of the drive. And then they've gone back once since, which I couldn't go to because my son was too young, but we're going this year. So this is the one that's going to probably break records for fundraising, because everybody wants to support this place because it's amazing. So
yeah.
Anyone who wants to donate to it, I will put a link in the YouTube and the podcast of where you can donate. It'll also be in the articles on our site. It's one of those, you know, $5, whatever, just donate whatever you can. I mean, like I said, some people can go through their corporate partners and they get such incredible, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The events are always fun, but going to this camp is always sort of every 4 or so years we try to go back to it. So anyway, that's what we're doing this summer.
Yeah. I'm so happy to hear about it. And thanks for taking the time to talk about it, Mike.
All right. So on that note, we are going to take a little break here. We are going to get another update on my Genesis coupe project. I did taillights last week, so this week it's headlights. We'll be back in a bit after you hear what I got and how it went. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With the parts you need at the prices you want, and with the eBay Guaranteed Fit, they're guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. Okay, time for one of my favorite parts of the podcast. We are now going to get back into Project Genesis Coupe. So after the walk around I did, I went ahead and did order a bunch of parts off of eBay Motors, and some of the guaranteed fit parts have begun to arrive. So the first thing we're going to do is put on the taillights that have arrived. They are a set of Anzo taillights. So those who are watching, here is what it looks like, and those listening, it's a taillight that's very similar to sort of the OEM look. I went with these because they're slightly smoked, which I like, but they still have the safety reflector in the bottom and the sides, which are important for both legality issues and if you park on the road. It has an LED dual strip for the running light and LED brake lights, and then a conventional bulb for the turn signal and the reverse light. All right, time to put these on, but before we can put these nice new lights on, we gotta take those old ones off. Getting lights off is pretty straightforward. In the trunk of the Genesis, on both sides, there are these little panels here that you just grab and pull off, and then you have access to all of the screws and bolts for the taillight. Let's get at it. Three of the nuts on either side of the lights were easy enough to take off. The fourth one was a little more difficult. It's the one that's closest to the fender on both sides. You had to kind of lean in and contort your body to get to it. It wasn't any more difficult to get off in the sense of actual force and effort. It was just getting to it. But once those four were taken off, the light wasn't really being held on by anything. So it's just a matter of disconnecting the wire harness and then popping the light out. Now, my lights took a little bit of effort to get out because they've sat there for 14 or so years getting salt, dirt, water, snow, all sorts of stuff on them. So just needed a little tap and a little push on both, and then they popped right out. Didn't have to move any of the bumper or any of the trunk lining, and it just left the opening to clean up before I would go and get the new ones to install.
All right, just like that, no more taillights.
So here's a bit of a demonstration of what these guaranteed to fit parts that I got on eBay mean. See the original taillight. For those listening, I'm showing what the original taillight looks like, and it has this lip on it for water protection and weather protection, and the new headlight has the exact same design. And if we turn around to the back, you can see the original headlight had the four screw holes and the two alignments, as well as the connector, and on the new one we once again have four screw holes, two alignment, and the connector, and even the foam in the back is very similar. Rather than waste your time watching me install them, I have put the taillights in, and as you can see, if you're watching the video, they look great. For those listening, you might want to head on over to our YouTube channel to see the podcast to get a glimpse of the taillights. But there is one thing we still need to do. I need to go see what they look like in the dark. I've got to say, I'm very happy with the way that these turned out. I like the design, I like the light, I like everything. Let's go see how it is with the signals and the reverse on.
Yep, still like them. Final test, put on the brake lights. Overall, I'd say this is another win.
All right, we're back. So as you saw, I'm actually quite impressed with the headlights. They're a little more stock looking than maybe I was going to go for, but I like the halos and they're functional, which is really important. I know there's some cooler designs, but you can't see anything. And I love the taillights and the whole look is good. The next two upgrades are going to be pure performance to a degree based. They're not just aesthetics. They're for fun, but and then after that we get into the heavy stuff. That's when the wheels and suspension, exhaust and stuff are coming.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to this week's news.
Wheels.
We have the biggest news is, you know, America's favorite pony car. Well, again, I guess because now the rest are gone.
Only. Well, I guess it's still 2024, so there still is a Camaro for a few more months.
So the 25 Mustang is celebrating its 60th anniversary, and they are doing a retro diamond jubilee. Is that what the edition's called, or is that just the event?
No, I mean, diamond jubilee is 60th anniversary. The model is just called Mustang GT 60th anniversary package.
I'm just not that smart, so okay, I get it now.
Yeah, so it was this week. It was their 60th birthday. They went to Charlotte Speedway, had 2,000 owners all show up and celebrate. But this is the special edition. And of course, it's limited to 1,965 units because, of course, there are three available colors. But really, the only right choice is Wimbledon white because it's a classic color. You get new wheels, you get a few stripes outside, you get some unique badges inside. Of course, there's a serialized badge, chrome accents in the grill, but anyone who's looking for one, you have to get a GT Premium. You cannot get a regular GT or any EcoBoost. It has to be the top model, well, outside of the Dark Horse, but at least you get the choice of convertible or coupe or manual or automatic.
Yeah, you know what I mean, it's not a big surprise. All these special editions like this, like when the California Special first showed up, it was always sort of built on the top trim. So isn't like you're getting this crazy performance boost. It's you're getting some of that retro style, which is pretty cool.
Yes. And I forgot to mention, because anyone who's listening and not watching the podcast, one of the most important changes are those sweet five spoke wheels. They look really cool, very retro.
So speaking of Mustangs, but on a completely different side of upgrades, Shelby introduced their newest Super Snake, which is what they've called their, you know, crazy Mustang upgrades for quite a few years now, or at least over a decade. But
yeah,
the interesting thing with this is you can get, again, coupe and convertible, but there's two versions of it, which, I mean, there's always been different versions, but there's a 430 horsepower package you can get on the like standard V8, or they can go crazy on your V8 and make it 830 horsepower with a supercharger. So I mean, I don't know which one I'd want, but it's kind of nice that you're not locked into having to spend a ton of money and get ridiculous levels of power if you just want the style and other upgrades that come with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, because 830 horsepower in a Mustang sounds like, I mean, bad news for pedestrians everywhere nearby.
But you know what? I mean, I've driven 807 horsepower Chargers and Challengers, and modern cars are so sophisticated and so good. Like, it's crazy how livable that power can be, whereas, you know,
true,
20 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you had that kind of power. Yeah, you were spinning your car out or burning tires off, or yeah.
And these do look great, I will say. So you know, no, we're good. On to the next one. I'm excited about this.
And now on to more power. So Lucid's Air, the Grand Touring, they made some tweaks, and on the surface, it may not look like it's that much better, but the EPA classification for range has changed and become much tougher, yet they were able to give it the same range. So good on them. Mm-hmm. And they did some other tweaks here and there. Part of it was they put a heat pump in the Sapphire. You know, that's the 1,200 horsepower version.
The irony there, of course, is I mean, I'm guessing here, but I imagine most people who are buying the Sapphire probably don't live in an area that needs a heat pump that often, but hey, whatever.
Ah, no, 1200 horsepower, 4 big studded snow tires, off you go.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah. All right, well, we kept the news brief because we have a lot to talk about still. After a word from our sponsor, we are going to come back and talk to Meguiar's about a whole bunch of fun topics and things you shouldn't be doing to your car and some things you probably should be. So we'll be back in a couple minutes. All right, everyone, let's take a moment to talk about cars. Not the usual cars we talk about on the podcast, but our own personal cars. As a person who loves cars, I have owned many different vehicles over the years, and there's one thing I always can't help but do, and that is modify them. Having the right parts that fit for a car is super important, as you don't want to waste time or money by having the wrong parts. Currently, I have a 2010 Genesis Coupe that was a sort of almost hand-me-down through a family member that I got at a great deal. Having driven it for over 2 years, I'm starting to get that modified bug, and I really want to update some features on the car as well as fix some of its problems. Now, I've always been a sucker for a little bit more noise, so I'm probably going to get an exhaust and intake on the vehicle. I had it on my Alero, on my RX-8, all of my WRXs, and I even tried to get one for my SBX, although I couldn't find the right guaranteed fit part. I'm also needing to replace some of the lighting on the exterior, as a few have lost their seals and are starting to fog up, and others are just kind of looking old and tired. Again, going on eBay and finding the exact part that will fit my vehicle, especially some cooler looking aftermarket ones, is a key factor. After that, I think it's time to look more at some of the mechanics of the car. Maybe some suspension components like a coilover, some strut bars, definitely needs new bushings, and I also want upgraded brakes. Down the road, putting a limited slip in the car or something along those lines would be fantastic. Again, being able to go on ebaymotors.com and find all of these parts right away that will fit my car is a huge bonus, because then I can cross shop and cross examine which part exactly I want without having to then figure out, will this for sure work or will it not? So if you're like me and you like to modify your cars, you should probably check out ebaymotors.com now. All right, welcome back. Kyle had to take off for a second for a prior engagement, but he'll be back later. But I am here with a special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself and what you do?
Sure. Great to be here today. My name is Mike Pennington, and I lead our global training events and our solutions hub team at Meguiar's. I've been honored enough and fortunate enough to work here at this brand for 34 years and love every minute of it. So wouldn't change a thing.
Wow, that's a long time. And Meguiar's is it's a known name, especially in car care. It's not something that maybe some people have heard of. So yeah, it's a long time. I'm sure you've had some success in there. It's going to get confusing back for people listening with two mics, but.
It's been great. I mean, we always chuckle. I've been here 34 years, but I like to say I started when I was 6, wink, wink. But the brand's been around since 1901, as you said, and we just keep chugging along and helping people get the best results. That's what it's all about, really.
So, yeah, in all those years, I'm sure you've seen it all and learned it all. So what is, like, the most common mistake you see people making when they're trying to clean their car?
Oh, you know, that's actually a very good question, because if you think about, you know, the evolution of appearance care and car care and paint and throw all that into it, it's really, if you kind of step back, those mistakes have kind of remained the same. And kind of the probably one of the top three, you know, we don't have them ranked ideally, is really choosing the wrong product. You know, and that could be the wrong type of accessory, the wrong toweling, you know, thinking a clay bar is going to remove swirls when it doesn't. Grabbing the wrong wheel cleaner. So it's just, unfortunately, grabbing the wrong product and not getting the benefits that you thought you were going to get. That's been happening a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think knowledge is gained over time. Like, I remember when I was a kid in the 80s, it was go inside and get the dish soap and go out and wash that, you know, primer gray car in the driveway. But those days are long gone, thankfully.
Yes, well, the dish soap, we still see some people. It kind of makes the hair on the back of our neck stand up. But yeah. It, you know, it's funny, because even if you get the right product, probably another big mistake. I think we've all been there, to be honest. You said knowledge is king is great, is not reading the directions and using that product wrong. So even though you have the right product, if you use it incorrectly, you're going to get, you know, let's call it mediocre or poor results. And that looks bad on everybody. So really getting the right product, read those directions and use it correctly. And that's when you're going to get the best results. And it's really pretty easy.
Yeah. How you said the right accessories too. Like I remember the first time I bought one of those all-in-one wax kits that came with the two brushes and the wax. And I did that to my car. I was like, oh, wow, this worked. Because clearly I didn't have the right cloths and sponges when I was doing it just with my own wax. So yeah, it's quite a difference having the right stuff.
It is amazing. It's very similar to, like, think of it like a mechanic. You know, people talk about the right tool, the right wrench. There's so many out there, and we'll admit it's pretty confusing. There's a lot of, let's call them Meguiar's products, but if you look at the entire category, there's even more out there, obviously, whether you shop online or brick and mortar, wherever you like to shop. So it does get confusing, but the right product is vital to get those and save you time. I mean, everybody, you know, we all love to spend some time in the garage working on our cars, but there's also times when you want to get it done quick and easy to get out there to enjoy your ride and take it out to that show or cruise, whatever it may be. So right product, key.
You mentioned the industry as a whole. That kind of leads to my next question without naming any names. are there not necessarily a specific product, but maybe a product category that just is not worth the money? I have one personally that I'll say later.
Well, you tell me first, because I, you know, it's tough to go down that path, because tell me where your head's at right now, and let's talk about that first.
Well, I have never come across a touchless wheel cleaner that really cleans the wheel the way I want. I mean, maybe it's, I get a lot of grime living where I do, or a lot of brake dust, but I mean, I use those with the brush and I get great results, but I've just never saw one that you just spray on and wash off and everything's gone.
I think you're probably onto something there, because it's really those miracle products to stay away from that promise the world and promise, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's not going to work. You said it perfectly. So there's a combination of product, brush, accessory, effort, whatever that may be, that perfect blend of all those working together is what give you those results. So I might say specific product, but I love what you said, kind of category of those wheel cleaners, but even bigger is the miracle products, the late night TV on sale, internet special, buy now, whatever that may be. Just if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Like, it washes your car and waxes it and does this and does that. You'll never get rain on your car out. Again.
Yeah. It's amazing that some of the stuff out there that we've seen here, and we've been fortunate to be around since 1901, and you just kind of see a lot of these companies come and they make a big splash, more power to them, you know, but then they kind of wean off and the excitement goes away. And when people, you know, if they start buying your product a second, a third, a fourth, or from Meguiar's years and decades later still, that says a lot about performance. So that's what we kind of put our stamp on, is the product's got to do what it says it's going to do, you know, because people are going to sniff you out. Consumers are going to sniff you out real quick if you try to deliver, let's call it a fast one on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I've been into cars since I was a kid, but as a teenager in the 90s, and I started working at 19 at a dealership, your company, and, you know, I can maybe think of two more, are car care companies that I know have been around since then, that like I knew really well then and still today. And like I said, there's another probably dozen I could name that. I don't remember when these guys were around. I mean, maybe they still are, but you just don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of good companies. Again, there's room for everybody to play in this fun industry we have, but just be mindful and pick what works for you. And, you know, the cream will rise to the top. You said there's three real good ones out there that come to your mind. That's awesome. You know, so just keep chugging away.
We've kind of talked about this a bit, and you've mentioned it a couple of times about effort, which I think is lacking when people are really trying to clean up their cars. What's a tip that everyone should know or follow that you constantly see people either ignore or try to get around?
It's probably reach out for advice. That's probably I know that sounds really odd to say that, but, you know, a tip would be really matching your condition to your expectations. And what we mean by that is, if you have a vehicle that is, let's call it maybe new to you, or you're restoring a vehicle and it's going to need a lot of work, but your expectations are perfection, which is great, but you're not willing to put the time in there, there's going to be a disconnect. On the contrary, is if you have a vehicle that's in great shape, was just restored, painted, brand new, looks flawless, your pride and joy, there's really no need to do all those steps and do all that effort and spend all that time. Again, disconnect. So reach out to advice with one, maybe yourself, maybe look in that mirror and say, what are you looking for? And if you got some challenges, reach out to an expert, reach out to a company, your favorite manufacturer. I mean, you can reach out to us on, you know, social, email, phone, digital, you name it. But really try to connect up those dots of what are you trying to do? What are you starting with? What are your end results? And that's going to allow you to get the right product. And then, of course, read the directions. Not all car manufacturers, whether it's Meguiar's or A or B or C or your favorite one out there, is a lot of times they're not identical the way they're used. You know, our wheel cleaner might be wet first, then spray on. And maybe another brand that you're trying out is spray on a dry wheel. So to get those best results and really give that product a true test is a good word, I guess you could say. Follow those directions and understand where you're starting and understand where you're going and align everything up. And you're going to step back and go, wow, that turned out even better than I thought it was going to turn out. And that's kind of what we strive for, is aligning all those factors.
Yeah, that's great. It's not like a specific thing. It's the broad thing of advice, which I totally get. I mean, I was clueless how to clay bar a car. And I went to someone that was like, how do I do this? Because even on the internet, I was like, I didn't even want to attempt because I'm afraid of damaging the car more than helping it. And I had an extended family member quite a few years ago, but he had a car from the late 80s. And it wasn't like a classic he had bought to restore. He just still had it. And he was cleaning it up and everything. And he was complaining about his bumpers and his trim. It was all that, you know, that rubbery compound. I said, you know, there's products out there that you rub in there and it brings the shine back. And he didn't know. And when he did that, he's like, oh, wow, this looks so much better. Because it's getting that really white sort of faded
look. Yeah, to totally, totally.
Well, we kind of already talked about this with the dish soap. But are there other products that can harm a car more than help? Specifically paint?
Sure. That's a great one, because paint has changed over the years. You know, from, you know, Henry Ford, you can have any color you want as long as it's black, you know, basically to now, whether that's a paint, it's gotten thinner over time. It's got more delicate clear coats. Think about these tri-coats. I mean, all these gorgeous colors that in the sun really look wonderful. So probably one of the biggest things related to paint is too aggressive of a product. And that's a big, it's not just liquid, but think about your toweling, your accessories, your motion, your pressure, your applicator. There's all these things that are mechanical, if that's the right word, a mechanical abrasion or mechanical force. So if you're pushing down too aggressive of it, you know, let's call it an old school compound that was designed for paints in the 70s versus these delicate base coat clear coats, you could potentially mar or put a mark into that finish, i.e. a dirty washment, i.e. A car wash that is less than acceptable, tunnel wash that may have, you know, those old style of nylon beaters that are great for some cars, but certain vehicles you may want to find a new type of tunnel wash, a hand wash, a touchless, or do it yourself at your home so you can control the mitt, the pressure, all that stuff. So probably too aggressive of an approach. How's that?
That's good. As you said, like paints change and matte paints become quite the thing recently. Mm-hmm. As someone who gets into a lot of cars to test and review, whenever I get a matte paint car, like I'm usually not going to touch it because I don't want to damage it. Definitely not touching a car wash. And yeah, I'm very conscious about the paint on these cars. And as you said, like the old cars just had like this thick layer of thrown on that you couldn't do anything to, but cars today is very thin.
It is. And it's kind of a catch-22 because they're gorgeous. They're lighter, you know, all those fun facts. But especially you mentioned Matt is, you know, think about you and I together have seen that kind of start from, you know, whether that's way back in the 50s where you couldn't afford a paint job, but all the way to now where it's on the OEM vehicles and probably more OEM than people would think, but they are very delicate. You said it perfectly. Once you get a a swirl mark, a towel mark, a dirty mitt mark into a matte finish, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no way to remove that. So take that sensitivity, that heightened security, that heightened caution on a matte finish to the next level. But they can be cared for. You can still wash them delicately. You can still spray wax them in certain cases. So you just need to pause, think about it, ask that expert, grab the right product, follow directions, and stand back and enjoy.
So my final question, maybe a follow-up. What should someone look for in like a car soap or any other cleaning product? Like, is there something, if they read the label or the ingredients or whatever, that they should be looking for, or maybe more importantly, not looking for?
Well, really, if you talk about car wash in particular, the kind, there's so many of them out there from, you know, it could be price driven, but typically the higher the price, you're going to get more bells and whistles. For example, if you just want an entry level car wash that's maybe for your daily driver, that doesn't need all the bells and whistles, great. More power to you. Follow the dilution directions, because we're always going to recommend a pH balanced car wash. And a lot of great companies, maybe that's our Deep Crystal, whatever it may be, follow those dilution. And then if you want to step up into getting more gloss or even a wash and wax, but really where we're going is on these coated cars and these cars that have coatings these days, whether that is a professionally installed coating or a one that you did at DIY, like our Ultimate Ceramic Coating, or there's a lot of great products out there. You're probably going to want to use a product that's designed to maintain those vehicles, because you want to match that surface tension. You want those big fun beads that a coated car is going to give you. Use a wash that's not going to diminish that. It's going to enhance that and give you that self-cleaning, that easily cleanable, that easily washable, dryable. So really washing is, in fact, that's probably another mistake. I'll add that to it, is not having a maintenance cycle. People don't wash their cars frequently enough, and everything gets built up on there. Then it just creates more work down the road. It could etch, stain, bond. I mean, and you've seen it. You've done clay. You've taken out swirl marks. So if we can help consumers know, washing frequently or getting yourself into a routine is the best thing for that paint, those wheels, with the right products. Everything works easier, washes off easier, looks cleaner, takes you less time. You know, it's really, give us a little bit now, and it's going to save you a lot of time later. In fact, I think it was Barry McGuire that kind of semi-coined the term, frequent car care is easy car care. And it really holds true to this day today.
Yeah, we live in sort of the worst of all car conditions. We're in the rust belt. We salt our roads like crazy in the winter.
Oh, ouch.
My particular house, I live underneath a giant maple tree, so we get the sap.
You're adding birds to it. There.
Yeah. So yeah, like the cars I get for work, they're only here briefly, but our personal cars, we're always trying to wash every once in a while. And once that sap gets on, try to get it off, because like
absolutely.
I said, I had a car I didn't care about years ago, and I remember it got sap and other stuff on, and I just let it go for years, and it would never come off. But I didn't care about that. But yeah, it's not hard to damage paint with a lot of things.
Yeah, Mother Nature. And ask yourself, I mean, we're not saying wash every single car every single day. Of course not. But again, you've got a work vehicle, a daily driver, maybe your weekend play toy. And even a daily that is in those conditions you talk about, we tell people still, even during the wintertime, it's a great time to run it through the proper tunnel wash, because it's more about preservation, not beautification. You know, summertime, spring, you're washing for beautification. Looks great. But winter, still get all that salt, snow, wheel wells, undercarriage. Get that off there as often as possible. It's going to save you in the long run for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't travel far because we're both work from home. But our philosophy is when we get gas, we get a car wash, because
there you go.
You know, once or twice a month. I know some people are filling up multiple times a week, but yeah, sort of set the bar. Well, that's all the questions I have. I know you're
have fun.
Really, really into cars and everything. Do you have anything really cool in the garage right now?
God, yeah, we do actually. I've had a 67 Chevy 2 that I've had for, let's see, going on about 23 years now. It's a true SS vehicle. It's got multiple motors, multiple trannies. They always say, is it ever done? And the answer is, of course not. So that just consistently, you know, changing this, changing that. Let's put this in, let's put that in. So that's a fun little car that is, I shouldn't even say this, but it's been rainy several weekends in a row here in Southern California. It's real nice right now, as you can see, but it's time to start getting that car out even more. And then my wife, her, let's call it garage fun weekend toy. She has a Audi R8 manual gated vehicle. So that's her suspension, wheels, tires, all the fun stuff, exhaust. It's great. So you open up and you can see, do you want exotic? Do you want classic hot rod? So we're very fortunate to kind of have a little bit of both. What do you want to play with? Then we also have a 4Runner. Throw that in there. Brand new 4Runner as well if you ever want to go off-road. And so, yeah, we're very fortunate.
Get off road or go to a track day or go to a car show. You're set.
There you go. You pick. What are you feeling like today? Because they're all cool. It's so, people always ask, what's your favorite, let's call it genre of car, but God, there's so many of them out there. You like low riders for a certain reason. You like, you know, trucks for a certain reason, lifted, lowered, airbag, classics. You know, I mean, there's so many things about the hobby and even just a brand new, maybe it's a brand new Expedition that the seats fold automatically when you push the button. That's fantastic. You don't have to pull the straps. Let it do it by itself. Gotta love that too.
Yeah. No, I totally hear you. I like pretty much all genres of cars, where some people are very specific about one, but I'm into muscle cars as much as the Japanese 90 cars and exactly. whatnot. But we should probably get going before awesome. This gets too long. But thank you so much. We can talk probably for hours, but yeah, I'd love to have you on again sometime, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, appreciate the opportunity and would love to hop back on and talk shop again. So until next time, enjoy.
Thanks. All right, it's F1 time. We have Colin Wood back to talk about rumors and maybe we'll do some predictions. But what rumors do you have this week?
Mike, thanks for having me as always. Very exciting. There's a lot going on. It seems like the silly season has already started. I think last week we talked about, what was it, about Alonso. So now, you know, there's a lot of rumors swirling around Carlos Sainz, as you'd expect, right? So there's interesting stories there, right? So one of the first ones has been, okay, that he could go to Mercedes. That seems like, you know, probably maybe a better call for Mercedes than it is for Carlos. There's also this story circulating that I saw this tweet basically that Red Bull confirmed they're in contract negotiations with them. And that's not really true. When you read the tweet, you read the actual article from the journalist, I can't remember who it was somebody Dutch. Basically, it comes down to saying, yeah, Helmut Marko admitted that they're talking. So it's like talking and contract negotiations are not the same thing. But there has been a lot of rumors that basically Audi has put a very big offer in front of Carlos Sainz, and other teams just feel like they can't even match that. So even if like Carlos is almost going to be in this weird situation where is he going to have the, you know, the, like, is Audi going to be the team right away that's going to bring him success? Probably not. But if they're willing to pay him so much money in the short term, and tied to that, of course, is that obviously his dad, well, his dad has ties to Red Bull and he has ties to Red Bull. His dad also has ties to Audi. They want that car this year. So, so there's that. I'm trying to think of what other juicy stuff there was. A crazy story.
Sorry, just on Carlos there and Audi. Yeah, I could see Audi wanting to do that because they obviously don't want to be like Toyota or Honda and come in and not do much. And they have the advantage of they're going to come in the year that the regulations change. So maybe they can nail it. But it's really hard. I don't care how big of a company you are to come in and just, you know, hit the ground running. Like, you need to get there. And even with the regulation change, especially if they're going to do their own powertrain, I don't know if they are, if they're going to buy one, but
no, apparently they are. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to do that. Yeah. So I could see them wanting basically a driver that can win and do well. And then they'll kind of know if it's the car or not, as whereas if you get someone you're not so certain about. But yeah, it's sort of like Lando with McLaren and some other drivers. Like, do you want to be the guy that goes to that team and then you are the one that helps build them up and, you know, potentially get success with them, and then it's like your legacy? Or do you want to go somewhere where you're competitive right away?
Yeah. And I think it's, I always wrote off the Audi idea because I thought to myself, well, Carlos doesn't want that. He's old enough in his career. He's not a rookie. Like, and he's not at the end of his career either. He's at the peak, right? So he shouldn't be in a position where he's going to sort of do what Schumacher did with the start of Mercedes, right? And come there and build a team, or what they thought Vettel was going to do at Aston Martin. But at the same time, if Audi is just going to throw so much money at you to basically make you like a works driver, how do you say no to that, right? And mm-hmm. you could be maybe semi-competitive. So it could be, they could surprise the hell out of us and be immediately competitive. I kind of doubt it, but, you know, Audi's got a long history, so it'll be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so what was your crazy rumor?
Oh, so the crazy rumor, which has no credibility as it turned out, but was plenty of fun to hunt down, was that Adrian Newey, for those who don't follow Formula One, this is the guy who basically, you know, designed the aerodynamics behind the Red Bull cars, McLaren before that. He was spotted at the airport in Bologna in Italy. So everyone thought, oh, he's going to Ferrari. This is it, right? Adrian Newey together with Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari, it's going to change the world. But then it turns out he posted some pictures of himself at the racetrack in Mugello, and he was just there goofing around with some cars, and there's nothing to it. So it was legit. He was there, but there was no Ferrari visit. So
sounds like a great cover story to me. After his morning meeting at Ferrari. Yeah, after his morning meeting, or maybe he was just there doing some espionage, just poking his head over the fence and seeing what they're doing.
Maybe. Yeah, and then the other story I saw, which I thought was very interesting, was that there's this idea that maybe Mick Schumacher actually, rather than Formula One, might go to IndyCar, because apparently Prima, which runs a team in Formula 2 and some other Formula feeder series, is actually going to have an IndyCar car, and that he could wind up there. So we'll see if that really turns out to be true or not. So,
yeah, like he has more potential and ability than I think he got to show, and
yeah.
There's been rumors he'd be the Mercedes replacement, but at the same time, if he went to IndyCar at this age, and he could be like a dominating force there for a long time.
So. Yeah, he could be good. I think it's like, it's one of those, he was in such a tough spot. Like, how do you turn down a Formula One ride? Like, you just can't, but then you wind up at a team like Haas, especially where they were, and you're really setting yourself back. Like, people just make you look worse as a result than really what you should be, right? So it's pretty hard to take.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for rumors. I don't know if you want to predict what's going to happen this weekend. For those not aware, we're recording this before Sunday's race. It could be very interesting. This might not be ever stop and win, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm torn, right? I feel like even Verstappen comes from like eighth, he could probably still win, right? Like, it seems obvious, but we'll see what happens with the, like, when we're recording this now, the sprint qualifying already happened. There was rain, which impacted it. But usually Verstappen's good in the rain, and he made some errors. So, hey, maybe we stick with the theme of Lando Norris and say, hey, this could actually be his first ever win. That would be nice to see. So,
yeah, I mean, how the sprint qualifying, would be great to see Mercedes and McLaren battling for a win, because I mean, Red Bull's always there, and Ferrari's been there a lot lately. So just, you know, more teams up there fighting. So,
do you have a prediction? Are you also on Lando, or you got?
Yeah, that I just like McLaren, so I'm just going to go with Lando, and you know, we probably just jinxed him, and he's going to, you know, crash in the first lap. But
yeah, you're a papaya army guy.
Yeah, let's see how he does. I like the team. I like the young drivers. So
yeah, I always like the young drivers. It's fun to watch. I have one last little juicy tidbit for you. There was this another podcast I was listening to. The guy's name is Joe Pompliano. He's a like sports writer. Does a lot of like sports/business where they intersect. And I was listening to his podcast, and he had on the guys who basically one of the guys who's basically involved in running the Miami Dolphins. They own the stadium where the upcoming Miami GP is. And they talked all about all kinds of stats around it. But the fascinating one is that they made more money. They made 25% more money in ticket sales off of the Miami GP than the Dolphins make in a year. So that's how lucrative, like that's, you know, one single weekend is more money than the Dolphins make bringing in ticket revenue. That's wild.
Yeah, that is wild.
I think we'll see more U.S. races coming up.
Yeah, especially the prices they're putting them at. All right, well, next week we'll see if we were right. I probably weren't, but we'll see how it goes and see if we've got some new rumors.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mike.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, so those predictions, as I said, I could look very smart, or I'll look like a fool. And the thing will be, it'll have already happened before you hear. So, yeah. If I'm right, you're going to say I cheated and said it today, but today was really 3 days ago. So, anyway, moving on to what's next. So, Kyle and I are exhausted because we spent the whole week testing 11 different small SUVs. We have a full length video coming of it, some individual head-to-head videos and stories, and it's just been a crazy 5 days. But it was very interesting getting all of that we call it sort of the small compact because it's like the class for the Crosstrek and the Seltos and the Taos and Corolla Cross, where they all live. Sort of the size that compacts used to be before they grew into basically midsize. But anyway, look for that in a couple weeks. We just got to get it all together. Next week, I will be driving the new 2024 Hyundai Sonata. This is the refresh, which hasn't really been around yet. I mean, it's had some, see it oddly here and there, but I'm looking forward to it because I was thinking, and I don't remember if I've even driven the new generation. So this will be interesting to get into the refresh.
Yeah, I don't think you would have because I drove it for us back when it was new, and that was before you had come back to the light. So I'm actually a little jealous that you're driving it because I'm looking forward to it and I really liked the N line. I know that's not what you're driving, but still. But I actually have a very fun I have a small non-SUV next week too. I have the Prius Prime. It's not any different from what we've driven before. I've driven it a few times now. But it's one of my favorite everyday normal cars, and I'm really looking forward to spending another week with it in warmer weather. But I will be gone for a few days because I am doing a European tour with Nissan. And when I say European tour, I mean staying right here in Southern Ontario, because we're going to hit up a bunch of different cities, all named after cities in Europe. So Paris and Cambridge and London and some other ones. And it's going to be fun. And I'm going to try and share all of that on our social media channels as we're powering through in an Aria in a single day. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like a bunch of European settlers all landed in Ontario back in the day and just named the cities after where they came from. There's a Dusseldorf, there's a Berlin. Yeah, there's a lot out there. But yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And the Prius Prime isn't the exact same as the regular Priuses we've driven. There's a very minor power difference.
Yeah, there is a minor power difference, but also it's heavier. So it balances out. But I mean, I love driving plug-ins. Living in the city, it's great because, yeah, you get extended time of essentially driving an EV.
And yeah, I was going to say, like, the range is such an improvement on this. I'll be curious to hear what you do in the real world with it, like you always like to.
The goal is to hit 62 miles or 100 kilometers, because I have heard from some other sources that it is possible, or at least very close. So yeah, we'll see.
I remember back in the second gen Volt, I did something similar, and I ended up coming up a bit short of 100 kilometers. But yeah, right conditions. Anyway, that's it for us. It's been another busy week. So next week, we'll be back with some new features, news, F1 rumors, and we'll have a special guest. Until then, this has been the AutoGuide Show, brought to you by eBay Motors, and we'll see you later.
So long.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Your elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a driveway entirely its own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with the eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.